Rapid fire. Do you support repealing Act 10?
Yes.
Universal child care?
Yes.
Free school meals?
Yes.
Guaranteed pay leave?
Yes.
Abolishing ICE?
Yes.
A one-year data center moratorium?
Yes.
Public grocery stores?
Yes.
Right to repair?
Yes.
Legalizing cannabis?
Yes.
Overturning Citizens United?
Yes.
A free Palestine?
Yes.
A Scott Walker statue that people can go to that are made by local artisans and craftsmen that people can slap up if they want to?
Tentatively, yes.
Okay. I tried to sneak that in there. I was like, oh, we got the momentum. Like you're saying yes to everything. Maybe I could catch you. This is the part of the broadcast that many people are waiting for. Francesca Hong, who is running for governor of Wisconsin. She's a DSA candidate. Hello. Yes.
Hello.
Francesca Hong, what an honor to have you here.
It's an honor to be here.
Very, very exciting. How did she fly in from PA so fast? Yeah, she was earlier in the day. She was on Michael from Pennsylvania's broadcast. She's here today. Thank you so much for coming.
Happy to be here.
Very excited. We got some gifts for you.
For me?
Yeah. Hannah, here we go. First
of
all.
Oh, Jisung's Haida. This is
crazy.
A really wonderful gift. I will send this into my family group chat.
Okay.
Yes.
I have some other stuff that we're going to be discussing as well, which is relevant to your background, relevant to your experience. But
right. This is so exciting. I haven't had this in years. I think the last time I had one of these was in Korea.
Yeah.
Very special. Thank
Hell
you.
Yeah. I've yet to go. I'm probably going to go this year. This is the one. It's like I've been to Japan. I've been to China.
Oh.
I've been meaning to go to Vietnam and I've been meaning to go to Korea. But Francesca Hong, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of you already know her. She needs no introduction. You've made big waves in all of the election watching Democratic Socialist circles. Francesca Hong is a Korean American DSA candidate for Wisconsin governor, single mom, restaurant worker and chef, a state representative in Wisconsin 76, Madison, Wisconsin. Your primary is coming up on August 11th, 2026. You have a bunch of opponents. We'll get to that. Mandela Barnes, Sarah Rodriguez, Crowley, Royce, and Brennan. You have gotten some key endorsements from Ilhan Omar,
yes.
Ro Khanna, Nina Turner, DSA, both Madison, Milwaukee, and Northeast Wisco, which we all love equally, okay? There is no... I know that there is some controversy within
rivalries.
The different friendly rivalry happening within the different DSAs in Wisconsin.
It's all love.
I there might be some more endorsements that are coming that I might have missed, but we're gonna play your launch video really quickly. Okay,
it's so stressful
for people who don't know. And the reason why I brought up the fact that you know your chef background is because one of my favorite foods that I have here in Los Angeles, California, is a Korean food. And if we reach, so how much money did you raise earlier with Michael from Pennsylvania?
With Mike from PA, we've raised over $35,000.
I hate that. It's unacceptable. Okay, if we beat Michael from Pennsylvania, are you hungry?
Always hungry.
Okay, if we beat Michael from Pennsylvania, we have to beat him. Okay, that's a lot of money, 34 grand. But if we fundraise, if we out fundraise, oh, that's two streams. How much did he raise in this last stream?
I don't know.
Oh, that doesn't count. Okay, it's two streams, but still, fuck it. If we beat Michael from Pennsylvania, we have a Korean American chef here, and I am going to. We're gonna do mukbang. Okay, we are going to. I sorry for signing you up for this, but it's not like a real mukbang. Okay, it's not. But we are going to try LA Korean food, and she's gonna give me her opinion on whether or not it's worth being my favorite food to eat here. Okay.
I don't want to ruin things for you.
Damn. No, I think you're going to like it. It's fire. It's galbi jjim.
Oh, I love galbi jjim.
Okay. So good. So that's right off the jump. That's good. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Let's get started. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get started. This was your ad, your campaign ad, your intro.
It's so stressful to get by these days. And I know a lot about stress. I work in restaurants. I started in this kitchen 15 years ago. And you might recognize what's across the street. A lot of people in that building don't get why it's so hard to get by right now. Working hard doesn't mean you can always keep up. One wrong step can lay you out flat. This is by design. I'm State Representative Francesca Hong. I'm a service worker, community organizer, and a mom. I work for a living. Always have, still do. 5 years ago, my community sent me to the Capitol. The system is rigged. I'm running for governor to fix it. For years, we've been told that doing better isn't possible. Well, let me tell you, that's bullshit. All we need to do is fight together. We can fully fund our public schools and have universal childcare. We can guarantee paid leave and have cheaper healthcare. We can fix a rigged system that puts oligarchs over workers and small businesses. We can do better. Don't let anyone tell you we can't do this. We can build a Wisconsin where we share the table.
Aww.
Yeah.
I'm Francesca Hong, and I'm running for governor because I know that together we make better possible.
That was brilliant. Okay, so that's a goated launch video. You've turned into a lawmaker after working as a chef in kitchens. You're running as the DSA-backed insurgent in a six-way Democratic primary to replace retiring Governor Tony Evers. You were the daughter of Korean immigrants. You started Madison Kitchens as a dishwasher, worked your way up to executive chef, opened up your own ramen shop, and in 2020 became the first Asian-American ever elected to the Wisconsin legislature. You're a member of both DSA and the Assembly's Socialist Caucus. Now you're running a progressive campaign for governor of Wisconsin to succeed 74-year-old Tony Evers, ladies and gentlemen. You built a massive grassroots movement without corporate PAC dollars, modeled on the legacy of Wisconsin's historic sewer socialists.
Yep.
Which, you know, I'm sure Michael talked to you extensively about. He's a nerd who governed sewer socialists, governed Milwaukee for nearly 50 years, sponsoring legislation for universal child care, a state-owned public bank,
yep,
and a moratorium on AI data centers, which we hate here unconditionally. Your campaign seeks to demonstrate that bold democratic socialist governance can deliver material improvements to both urban and rural working class communities. Whew. Once again, Francesca Hong, thank you so much for coming.
So happy to be here.
All right. So you started as a dishwasher. You became an executive chef. You opened Morris Ramen.
Yep.
And during COVID, you launched Cook It Forward, where you paid struggling restaurants cook meals for food insecure families. You're a single mom. Every other person in this primary is a lieutenant governor or a county executive or an agency head.
Ooh.
What does a governor who has stood on a dish pit at 1 a.m. understand about working people in the state that a career politician fundamentally does not?
They understand the pain. I think that a lot of people are in pain right now, and politicians are not honestly acknowledging that. And there's a hustle. We knew from the get-go that we would have to be the campaign that out-hustled everyone. And I think that service industry workers were built different. Also, the dishwasher is the most, I think, the most important position in a restaurant. So it's more of a flex there that I want to work in the dish pit because then I'll know I'm the most important. So there's a little politician connection.
Okay, hell yeah. What do you think about your experiences working in restaurants translates to governance, but more importantly than governance, do you feel like it gives you a better understanding of the plight of the working class? And do you think every single person that runs for office has to work in the service sector in some capacity?
I think everyone, period, has to work in the service sector at least once or for some portion of their life. I think that working in restaurants has taught me that, one, you have to care about people. You see kind of the best and worst in humanity in restaurants. It's like a little microcosm of classism there. And you learn to respect folks regardless of what position they're in or what they're doing. And you also, I feel like I come in from a place where I'm grateful to have spent time in a restaurant where folks had big moments, celebrations, breakups, weddings, birthdays. But I think more importantly, too, it's that work ethic of always trying to put others first. That came from working in restaurants and being an immigrant's daughter.
This race is very important for a lot of different reasons. Obviously, there's a tremendous momentum happening with democratic socialism in this country right now. There have been big waves in New York City. Yeah. I like to say New York City is the tip of the spear. They have a well-oiled machine in New York City DSA. But I believe genuinely that these policies are universal and are broadly accessible and broadly popular everywhere else. Wisconsin is a purple state. For the longest time, the conventional wisdom was that a Democrat had to run as a milquetoast centrist in a place like Wisconsin, basically a Republican who cycles just to survive the general election. Yet in 2016, 71 out of 72 Wisconsin counties went to Bernie Sanders the primary. And in the general, Donald Trump ended up beating Hillary's centrist campaign. Trump barely lost Wisconsin in 2020, but won it again in 2024 by 1%. It is the most purple of the purple states out there. What's your message to Wisconsin voters who have rejected centrist politics for over a decade and are looking for a politics that finally speaks to the masses?
It's time to build power. Time to build power through policies that put working class people first. Everyone deserves to have housing, healthcare, education, and food, be able to take care of themselves and their communities. And I firmly believe that it is through working class people power. That's how we're going to help folks understand that government is supposed to be a force of good. Republicans and centrists have made it so that government is dysfunctional. And you're meant to think that, you know, everything has to be the way that it is with your struggles, but it doesn't. We fully fund our public schools. Everyone has fair, cheaper health care. We make sure that we're, you know, actually holding utility companies, hospitals, insurance companies accountable. That's how you lower costs. It's both policy and making sure that we're unafraid to regulate and take on corporate interests through governing.
That's a great answer. Your signature issues, some of which you talked about just now, are universal child care and universal paid leave.
Yep.
In Wisconsin right now, families are paying more for daycare than for UW tuition. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans let Tony Evers' Child Care Counts program nearly fall off of a cliff.
Yeah.
What does universal child care actually look like for a Wisconsin family under your rulership as Governor Hong?
So we would make sure that families of four making up to about $114,000 a year or 400% above the federal poverty level would have fully subsidized childcare from 0 to 12. So we all know that summer camps cost money too. And just because your kiddo is in school doesn't mean that there aren't going to be additional care costs involved. And now those families making above that would have a partial subsidy. And we ensure that there's subsidies available for the providers too, while raising wages for care childcare workers and educators. And we pay for it by putting in a very small payroll tax that will end up actually being a massive economic investment. Folks need to see childcare as infrastructure. You cannot have your local dollar stay in your local economy unless you invest in policies like childcare and paid leave, because worker forward policies actually make for better lines for the business.
Do you feel like there is an appetite for this kind of policy, even from Republicans as well? Because I know that this is probably one of the things that you've withstood thus far, the fact that you're too radical for a state like Wisconsin. I'm sure you've heard that quite a bit, even though you've been very popular in your run thus far. But there is always this electability barrier that centrist Democrats have presented against the likes of Bernie Sanders.
Sure.
And I assume someone such as yourself as well. Now, what's interesting is, at least in my anecdotal experience, at least with the experiences that I've had going all around the country, going to protests, demonstrations, I have noticed that the electability argument is no longer working, that many centrist or many Democrats vote blue, no matter who. Democrats that voted for Hillary Rodham Clinton, voted for Biden, voted for Kamala Harris, realized after the sequence of defeats that Donald Trump delivered that they were lied to, that Bernie was right. This is something that I've heard over and over again.
Yeah.
So do you feel like these policies, implementing free childcare and $20 minimum wage, publicly owned grocery stores, do you feel like there's appetite from Republicans as well, in your experience from your campaign going out and knocking on doors, sometimes I assume in red areas as well?
First of all, the person who wins the most votes is the most electable. Second of all, if it is radical to have free childcare in public grocery stores, I would say let's be radical. Let's embrace that, because that hasn't been what we've done in the past. And look at where we are now. Using the same playbook and strategy when we are where we are, I think that's irresponsible. And we've been incremental in the past, and it's led to complacency. So I think incrementalism is irresponsible. We should be unapologetic about using the word power. And working class power is something that everyone who is working class is interested in.
Yeah.
And we've been made to think that we can't build our own power, and we absolutely can.
And it transcends beyond party lines. Remember, for the general, past the primaries as well.
I said this morning too. I've talked to Republicans and Trump voters and big skeptics in rural areas, and I think so much of how, like, we've lost the trust of so many people. Folks who feel very left behind, that have been talked at. Politicians have come through, made promises, or pretended like they give a shit when they don't. And I think being the restaurant worker and the single mom, the person who's showing up not as a career politician, but as someone whose livelihood is also on the line, that relatability matters. And I think it's important to put in the work to actually build trusted relationships, to be able to build trust back into government that it can do something good for you.
Hell yeah. Speaking of doing good, you want to expand Badger Care. It's one of your top line promises.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin is one of the, I believe, 10 states left in the entire country that still hasn't fully expanded Medicaid. Wisconsin Republicans have blocked it for more than a decade, turning down billions of federal dollars and leaving people stuck in the coverage gap. Remember, for chatters that don't know, Medicaid expansion is purely partisan. The fact that Republicans refuse to expand it, and the fact that many red states have had to fight for ballot access so that they could push for it via ballot measure that they voted on, implies that the only thing here that's standing in the way of people living in Wisconsin and having access to additional billions of federal dollars, subsidies, is just the Republican Party. What does healthcare actually look like for a working family under Governor Hong? And how do you finally get Medicaid expansion, a public option, done when the GOP has spent over a decade killing it?
It is one of the number one issues. Wherever I go, folks talk about public schools, data centers, and healthcare. And expanding Medicaid, Badger Care, is step one of many steps that we actually have to take simultaneously. A public option, we absolutely, that's going to help both employers and employees make sure that we're competing with the marketplace to bring premiums down. But healthcare prices are high because healthcare costs are high because healthcare prices are high. So if we aren't taking on the way that hospitals might be charging insurance companies 4 or 5 times more than what they're getting reimbursed for Medicare, and then consumers, the people, are at risk of having higher premiums because people are jacking around and fucking around with prices, you're in a cold war between insurance companies and hospitals. And so in addition to actually investing in public option and expanding Medicaid, we have to be willing and unafraid to regulate, to bring down hospital prices, to make sure that we're cracking down on insurance claim denials and going after a way that some hospitals may not pay any taxes on their profits at all. If you don't do these things simultaneously, we can't actually sustainably have fairer, cheaper healthcare for everyone, which is what folks deserve. And I think that's the piece that we don't hear enough from politicians, is that we have to be able to, I want regulate to be a fun word and not a dirty word.
Yeah. Good governance and reinstilling confidence that your government will help you out, I think, is a primary priority. We talked about healthcare briefly, but you also co-sponsored a bill to create a state-owned public bank modeled on the Bank of North Dakota, famously a communist state, which is the only one of its kind in the country. And also, by the way, as far as publicly owned grocery stores, another communist policy that's being implemented in communist Indiana, another again, communist state. But yeah, so it's the only one of its kind in the country. Why has a state bank thrived for over a century in a deep red state like North Dakota? And how would it let Wisconsin invest in farms and small businesses instead of shipping money off to Wall Street?
That piece right there. We want our money in our communities to stay in our communities. So many farmers, especially, just getting completely bogged down and harmed by rising tariffs, by big ag, not being able to access loans because these financial institutions care more about the profits than the actual people who need the loans. We have a public bank to then have lower interest or no interest loans going out to create predictable financing for housing development and affordable housing projects, to help small business owners, you know, businesses owned by people of color, to be able to scale or sustain. The reason folks have, you know, they've been hesitant or don't want to do this, because then you're directly competing with these large for-profit banks that are not actually interested in creating commerce or having a strong economy in their community. They want to, it's more predatory. If it's under the state, it's actually regulated and making sure that it's the public's interest that the state is financing and not working with private commerce.
Okay. I have a campaign idea.
Okay.
Okay. Francesca Hong, no woke Wall Street bankers, keep the bank in Wisconsin, anti-woke bankers only.
Can we just do the last part?
Keep the bank in Wisconsin. None of that woke Wall Street stuff. No DEI bankers from Wall Street.
No woke Wall Street. Public banks only.
Yeah. It's anti-woke. We should package it as this is how it works.
Anti-woke.
Anti-woke bankers only. They're saying, and this is why he don't run, Chad. Just flies off the tongue, bro. Okay, calm down, guys. I'm trying.
We love good alliteration. No woke Wall Street.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Your mother was a public school music teacher whose first year of teaching coincided with Scott Walker, which is seen as, I think, a demonic figure in the state.
He destroyed it.
Yeah.
And he's now fighting for relevancy. It's really quite sad.
Yeah. Scott Walker ramming Act 10 through the legislature. You've said that protesting Act 10 with your mother was your first ever protest. Yeah. Now you're running for governor on a platform to put a stake in Act 10 and enshrine a constitutional right to organize. Can you explain to viewers how Act 10 stripped so many workers off their collective bargaining rights and how your mother's experience shaped your political vision?
So I do have to come clean. My first protest was when I walked out with my classmates in high school protesting the war in Iraq. But my first protest with my parents was Act 10.
Now, Francesca Act Hong, 10. Can you trust her? She lied about what her first protest was.
First protest with my parents.
Okay.
The family protest is a separate protest. So Act 10, because the way that you go after working class people and movements is to dismantle the power of workers to organize. And so Act 10 stripped all public sector workers of a union. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not enough to make sure that we repeal Act 10, which we can do through legislation or it can get struck down in the courts. However, we want to make sure that a bill like Act 10 never comes up again. And so I'd like to see Wisconsin actually be able to take an issue like this to the voter through a ballot referenda so that we can put it into our constitution that you have a right to collectively bargain and unionize.
One of your primary opponents is Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, and she just consolidated the moderate wing of the party after Missy Hughes dropped out to endorse her. She's backed by over $5 million in independent expenditures. You're running an avowedly grassroots campaign that completely rejects corporate PAC money. How does running a campaign powered by working class donors and working class energy neutralize this massive financial advantage that Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez has? And how do you convince voters that electing an unbossed socialist is worth the risk of bucking the party machine?
I have to answer to the people. They're the folks who are backing our campaign. We have more individual donations than the next two candidates combined. No corporate PAC money, no APAC-backed money. This is ensuring that literally the folks who are powering our campaign are who I answer to, not special interests and not lobby. We have already hit over 40,000 doors in our state, just one weekend over 10,000. And these aren't just volunteers who have been working with Dems and other campaigns. These are folks who are new to politics, folks who haven't knocked doors before. When you're engaging and earning the excitement of people who haven't been in politics before, that means that we're breaking through one of our biggest opponents, which is apathy, which is disillusionment. And I think that's something you cannot buy. You cannot buy the excitement of the voters. You have to earn that, build relationships, do the work on the ground, and actually show folks that you are not just fighting for them, but we are the campaign that's fighting alongside them.
Hell yeah. So Wisconsin's primaries have a different system. It's open.
Yeah.
Right? The open primary. So Wisconsin's open primary rules mean anyone can vote in your primary regardless of party registration. Mm-hmm. At the same time, polling shows that the vast majority of voters are currently undecided or completely tuned out What's your message to those voters who feel like establishment politics of the past few decades have basically forgotten about them? They just sold them out. And what do you say to conservatives who have grown tired of Trump's costly wars and his lack of transparency with the Epstein files and gas prices skyrocketing because we are waging Israel's wars on their behalf in Iran?
You deserve better. You deserve permanent affordability and a Wisconsin that belongs to you. I think ours is a campaign that focuses on building community and policies that are universal, but we have to message in a way, and we have to let folks know that we are doing this for you, the individual, so that you can better take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community.
On the campaign trail in central Wisconsin, you've spoken about validating rural rage. The anger of rural communities that have been hollowed out by corporate tax breaks and offshore manufacturing. How have decades of corporate neoliberalism and austerity hollowed out rural Wisconsin? And how does your plan to build publicly owned grocery stores, the bill AB 1221, and reinvest in municipal infrastructure directly address that anger?
One of the things that rural folks really get excited about when our campaign comes through to meet with them is the younger folks in the area who show up for us, who are now showing up to meet with some of these county party leaders who are generally white and over the age of 65. And we're showing folks that, look, a different type of politics is possible that will bring in a different type of policy. Because these are areas where middle manufacturing, paper mill jobs, paper mills have shut down. They went overseas. These are places where GM plants and, you know, good paying union jobs with good benefits, they were shipped overseas. And so when we focus not only on bringing in middle manufacturing good jobs through public grocery stores and investing in infrastructure, but we think about a green bank with green new jobs that are powered by union jobs, and we're investing in, you know, clean energy infrastructure, updating schools to be green schools. We're talking about good jobs to update municipal buildings and fucking fix the potholes in the roads. And so there's been a manufactured divide and resentment with policy that, you know, pits urban and rural against one another. But it's because they're policies that favor corporate greed and corporate profit that that's happened, not because, you know, we're trying to create that. It's not about a manufactured divide. It's about making sure working class people have opportunity in their community to keep money in their community.
Okay, I like that. But what if my suggestion to you was billions of dollars in tax breaks for AI data centers instead of fixing the potholes and also rural infrastructure alongside urban infrastructure?
So we got data centers in Wisconsin right now.
We
and
need more.
They're exempt. They don't pay sales and use tax. If we were to delete in our control alt delete plan for data centers, those corporate subsidies and exemptions, we're looking at $2.1 billion that we can put into public transit, clean infrastructure, and fixing the damn roads. That's a Tony Evers quote.
Who needs to get on the bus or even drive on roads that that you have to have adequate suspension on when you can feel the joy of paying extra for your electricity bill because there's an AI data center down the road
humming.
That's sucking up all of the energy and also humming and creating environmental catastrophe as well.
Yeah, I just... You know, I think that money can be used in better ways. I think that we should be taxing the billionaires and the ultra rich and having a wealth tax so that finally our money is staying in our communities as opposed to our money paying for the tax breaks of some of the wealthiest people in Wisconsin and paying for these companies to have lobbyists to then line up and basically be a puppeteer for politicians. I think the money that goes to lobbyists from corporations that come from breaks that we pay for, that in itself is a fucking abomination too.
So let's talk about cranes and trains. Not so big on the cranes in general, but I definitely love trains. You're the only candidate, as we've adequately mentioned, who is calling for a moratorium on data centers, and Wisconsin still wants to hand big tech more than $2 billion in tax breaks. Your cranes and trains plan says take that money, hire the exact same union workers, take that exact same money, and instead of building an empty server farm that jacks up everyone's electricity bill, We build homes for people can afford, a greener grid, schools and transit that actually works. How do you envision using Wisconsin's multi-billion dollar surplus to build bridges and trains for the engineer in Milwaukee, the dairy farmer in Green Bay, and the student in Madison, rather than gifting tax breaks to big tech companies?
I think the entire vision and what Wisconsinites need to remember is that the state belongs to them and not these big tech companies and not these outside contracts that are coming in. And they're not putting our workers first or putting in project labor agreements. And I think in order for us to grow working class people power, we have to be the ones to have democratic control of the economy, which is why we have to put this money, as opposed to subsidizing data centers and big tech, we actually put it into the communities, what they're demanding to help make communities safer, more affordable, and more sustainable for our kids.
I'm going to stay on the AI data center situation, because Microsoft is turning the old Foxconn graveyard into a data center. Many in Wisconsin remember that the Foxconn deal was a disaster.
We got Foxconned.
Yeah, yeah. Complete failure. Scott Walker promised $10 billion in 13,000 jobs. Wisconsin ended up getting a fraction of the jobs, hundreds of millions in local infrastructure debt, and nearly 100 families' homes were bulldozed for a factory that never really came. As governor, how do you break Wisconsin's addiction to bribing corporations that never end up delivering?
I think they got to pay up front. We have to talk about, instead of cutting deals, where many of these developers and AI companies are actually operating on borrowed money, right? And so going into a financial agreement, you know, taking on that much risk with taxpayer money is deeply irresponsible. So I think if they're going to build here, they need to pay first. If they're going to be able to use, if they want to use something for surveillance to compromise our natural resources and compromise public health, we have to, I think, make Wisconsin a more hostile state to some of these larger corporations and not be in a situation where we're having to clean up because Foxconn was nowhere near its promise of how many jobs they were going to bring.
So speaking of being hostile or being a more hostile state, I have a proposal.
Well, there is, Wall Street.
Oh God, why did you take such a big gulp? Oh no. Okay.
I'm bracing myself.
Okay. In China, there's this statue of a former emperor, and people go up to that statue and slap it. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Like, people take their shoes off and they'll like hit the statue for thousands of years of shame. And it's a shame statue. I propose building a Scott Walker statue that people can go to and slap it up and spit on if they want to. Do you feel like this would take out some of the frustration that Wisconsinites are feeling? And it would be relatively cheap. You could even charge people at certain points at entry. Here, I'll show you the.
I think we should support local artists and have it be an active exhibition. Wisconsin also happens to
be. Have you ever wondered
be...
why people in China keep hitting these statues again and again? Some people think it is just a strange tradition, but there is actually a deep story behind it. You might have noticed that the statues look different over time because they slowly break and have to be rebuilt. These statues are not random. They were made to represent people who betrayed a famous national hero many years ago. Even after hundreds of years, people have not forgotten what they did.
So hitting the statue.
Okay, this is like low-key kind of a go-to proposal. I was just joking, but what if local artists made Scott Walker statues and then people could do that?
That's where I'm at, is Wisconsin is actually last or second to last in arts funding, and it's an absolute embarrassment. You know, states like Minnesota actually have a portion of their sales tax that goes to like a heritage and cultural preservation fund where they actually fund arts. So if this means that we are commissioning local artists, that they are paid well, that it can contribute to a broader creative economy, that it remains this kind of like active exhibition, I would consider it.
Okay, that's good.
It's got to support the artists.
We put those down. Write it down. Write it down. That's a proposal. If you're Fox News, don't write it down.
Oh my God.
Okay. All right.
I can't get
speaking
over
of
that
which, now that we got the 35,000, first set of mukbang for you is Hannah. Hannah's got another gift for you. It's not just the soda. We got something else for you as well, even though I thought it was disrespectful because it's microwaved, but here it is.
What is that?
What is it, Hannah?
Oh, red bean pancake. Thank you.
So we got you red bean pancake for it's air fried. Air fried red bean pancake. Which
cute
I feel
napkins.
Like
is Hannah, did you pick these out? I like these napkins too.
That's my mom.
Well, your mom's got great taste in napkins.
All right. Getting back to some of the questions that I have here for you. Okay, so Public Service Commission recently forced We Energies to make tech companies pay 100% of the generation costs for their data centers, rejecting a corporate handout that would have forced residential ratepayers to subsidize 25% of those costs. Mm-hmm. Yet We Energies is still trying to bypass this ruling by filing a separate rate case to jack up residential utility rates by over 9%. How will you prevent utilities from using data centers as a pretext to squeeze working families?
Well, we have to make sure the Public Service Commission has statutes in place that actually give them, you know, enforcement mechanisms to reject rate hikes. We also have to make sure that there are transparency measures and accountability reports where these utility companies, We Energies, has to actually show where the rate hike money is going, how they're going to use it, provide the auditing report so that we know it's not going to line a pocket of an executive, that it's actually going to make improvements in the grid or invest in renewable energy. And that it's a step in making in the broader goal, which has to be allowing local municipalities to have publicly owned utilities.
Yeah. Also, you introduced the Keep Families Together bill, getting into ICE a little bit. To completely ban local law enforcement from collaborating with ICE and prevent federal agents from terrorizing families at schools, libraries, daycares. As governor, what's your vision for protecting immigrants to ensure that ICE isn't ripping apart Wisconsin families? Also, our food is here.
Kybe Jim is here?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah, how will you stop ICE from ripping apart neighborhoods and families?
Well, I think it's paramount that the executive, again, wield to the fullest extent the power to ensure that we're protecting all communities from the enforcers of fascism, which is ICE. The Keep Families Together package ensures that we prohibit 287G agreements or local law enforcement from cooperating with ICE. We also have to make sure that we are giving the Attorney General's office full jurisdiction to be able to sue and prosecute individual ICE agents, as well as district attorneys at the district level, and that state money can go towards immigrant justice organizations to help fund different mutual aid efforts, legal observer trainings, know your rights trainings. And I think most importantly, folks need to know that their governor is on their side, and that just because the federal government, we do not have to participate, even when we may not always be able to override federal authority, doesn't require us to participate in it.
All right, we're at 37,000 raised, and also I just dropped a bill in there as well, so it's going to go up in a second, I suspect.
I'm excited for this food.
All right, let's bring the food in. Hannah, you got the food? All right, bring it in.
Hannah's wonderful, by the way.
Yeah, she's great. Here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Okay. So we got kimchi. There's a lot. But basically, the meta is to just, you know, pop this up. All right, pop it open. Oh, pop it open and let's see what your first reaction is.
Well, I'm going to be looking for chestnuts and dates.
Okay, they don't have any of those in there.
What the fuck is this, cheese? Nope.
No.
Nope.
No. Okay, try it.
This is you're putting cheese on Kybe Jim?
I didn't. They do it. I don't know.
Why?
Okay,
is
but
this?
Okay. But give it a try. Oh, but give it a try.
No.
But give it a try. But give it a try. But give
this
it a try.
This feels fucking sacrilegious.
Okay, give it
you
a try.
You have ruined Kybe Jim by putting cheese on everything, and I come from the dairy state. I fucking love cheese. We shouldn't be. Oh, God. I'm gonna contain
I'm not even
myself.
Listening to your
let
slander.
Me, let me
look at that cheese pull. Oh,
I mean, just call it something else. I was expecting Kaibijimin. Why?
What is... This is just a mashup? This is the worst of fusion food. Oh my god. So there are actually pieces of Kaibi in here.
Mm-hmm. With... Let's see. It quieted you down, so that's good. In spite of your initial reaction, is potatoes bad on it too, or is that...
Potatoes, carrot, garlic, sometimes like little... chestnuts or
chat. That was, I'm sorry to cut you off, chat, that wasn't misogyny. It's always a good thing if you put the food in your mouth and you go and you stop talking, that means it's good, that means you're excited. So this is not Kaibi Jim.
I mean, it's something. It has Kaibi in it. It was braised. Jim means braised.
Oh my god.
Okay, so the cheese on the Korean food craze started, I want to say, a couple years ago, and I don't understand it. This is very traditional.
So, can I ask you a thing about this, actually? Mm-hmm. So one of the things I wanted to ask you, and you got to get closer to the mic, sorry.
Yeah.
But one of the things I wanted to ask you is, cheese on Korean food has to be a byproduct of the Korean War, right? Like, I assume that, because there's no, like, it doesn't exist in, like, Asian cuisine for the most part. Cheese is not supposed to be in Asian cuisine like that.
No. I mean, I think that's, I don't know if I could pinpoint it to a certain day, but dishes like budae jjigae, that has, you know, spam traditionally or hot dogs and kimchi, and you boil it with other vegetables. That's very much a dish from the war and American, you know, Korea has one of the largest, if not the largest, American military presence outside of the U.S. But I think the cheese thing...
It's like a new evolution?
I think it's newer, and I think I'm going to go ahead and blame some like white male chefs who thought they were building something innovative and took fusion food in the wrong direction. But people love it, and if it tastes good, great. Can't tell me this is Kaibi Jim.
So it's not Kaibi Jim, but do you like it? Like, what's your assessment over it, on it in general?
Well, now it's hard because I'm going in with this very visceral reaction. Of seeing cheese. Okay. I'll have some more and let you know.
Oh, wow. This is... I would be more devastated if I wasn't eating my favorite food right now. Like, I'll be honest. Like, it's one of those things where... I mean, I get it. Like, I'm Turkish, and there are a lot of places that say, you know, this is authentic Turkish food, and then you have it, and you're like, this is not authentic Turkish food. It kind of sucks.
I don't even think this is cultural appropriation. I think it's just, like, it can be different cuisine. Like, that's... You would think that with the cheese and the Korean, like for me as a Korean American born and raised in Wisconsin, this should be a happy thing, but it makes me very angry.
Damn. But not the best feeling to invoke.
but I'm so glad you're enjoying it.
When I came in hot, my favorite Korean food and LA Korean food mogs. It turns out it doesn't mog.
I wonder if someone else can speak to when this cheese phenomena happened. But I feel like right now there are more white people who can speak Korean better than I can. Like, as a Korean who grew up in a time where, especially in a place like Wisconsin, where like Korean wasn't cool. And if anything, like your proximity to whiteness was your social capital as a way to kind of protect yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I did club soccer and theater, you know, the two least Korean American things maybe not soccer anymore. God damn it. We had a terrible showing. And now it's like so cool to be Korean. I have many mixed feelings about how Korean culture has become this phenomena. And now I'm like, am I cool enough to be Korean?
But I'm
going to go ahead and blame TikTok for this.
I'm going to stop your noise gate so that people can hear you better. But it's also probably going to cause a lot more mouth noises. So I'm just letting you know. But I guess that is technically
mukbang. That's okay. I'll get closer to the mic and further away from that.
From that thing? From that monstrosity.
I have beautiful kimchi in front of me now that I will eat with my rice.
Let's see if you like the kimchi.
I think I will.
I got sauce all up and down my beard.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, no, it's too sweet.
It had a
good shot at the beginning. You got a little bit of the funkiness from the shellfish and the salted shrimp. And that's the other thing. I feel like a lot of Korean food got very sweet. And I'm going to go ahead and blame, you know, white folks for that too. What else? There's the pickles. We can find a win here, right?
I mean, that's you can't mess that up.
Can't they? Can't you? Oh, that's nice.
So I have some more questions. And I know you don't have a lot of time left. So I'm going to burn through them as fast as I can. You have a No Secret Police Act imposing severe consequences, including a felony charge and $100,000 fine on any law enforcement officer who covers their faces, hide their name and conduct or conducts arrests without identifying themselves. What's your vision for holding officers accountable? And how do you believe policing should evolve such that we do not create more Kyle Rittenhouses and, you know, things like that?
We have to invest in community. You can't be tough on crime if you're not going to be tough on causes. Our educators and police officers are having to respond to crime and so many of societal failures. If we look at the communities that are safest, they're the ones where folks have good jobs with good benefits, adequate mental health resources. Our kids have community centers and places to go and be themselves and have fun after school. Our schools are fully funded. I think that if we do not actually invest in making sure working people have their needs met, we are not adequately addressing crime. And this is a system right now that has the Epstein class running free. So don't tell me that it's working and that we shouldn't fight for reform. We have to fight for reform. You mentioned before that, you know, childcare costs have now exceeded a year of tuition for UW-Madison. Well, it costs more than that to incarcerate one person in the state of Wisconsin. And Wisconsin incarcerates Black men at a disproportionately high rate, higher than most states across the country. So this is not working. And if we want to be serious about public safety, if we are serious about crime and actually making sure that our kids have a future, we have to invest in community first. Police are a response to crime. And right now they're responding to a lot of things that aren't crime and then creating more violence.
Yeah. We're also at 46,000, I think.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I might have poisoned you with bad Korean food, but at least, you know,
we just don't have to call it Korean food and it's okay.
Okay.
We can have, and I hope, don't fault me. I think you made,
I love this place and I will forever ride for it. So it's fine that you don't like it. It's okay. And maybe I'd be more sad if I wasn't eating this delicious food right now. And
if you had just told me it was not, if you didn't tell me it was Kaibi Jim, I would be enjoying that.
Okay.
You queued me up.
Well, that's what it says on the menu.
Yeah, you queued this up to fail.
They queued it up. They set it up.
Add, that has to be like an add-on for cheese, though. They wouldn't put it on the menu with cheese on it. Like,
no. That is an add-on. Yeah, the rice cakes are an add-on.
What?
The cheese is an add-on. I added on because that's...
Oh, so you did this?
No, but they added on like, and the when you go there,
yeah,
and you order it, yes, the cheese and rice cakes are add-ons, yes.
So sometimes one of the more annoying things that would happen in the restaurant is when you have folks who are like lots of substitutions, lots of add-ons.
No, this is like like it's not, I don't like randomly decide to put cheese on it.
I know,
it.
These are available as add-ons to enhance the meal and the dish. Yeah. No, it's, I can... Again, had I known this was the product or this was the dish, that's very mukbangy. Did everyone see the cheese pull?
Yeah.
I think that's what food
people... You hate
people...
it. You hate me. You're like, I'm doing a Hasanabe ban from the state if I win the race.
I love cheese and I love Kaibi Jim and I just don't want to see them together. But they're both delicious on their own. Are you gonna open the gifts that we brought you?
Yes, but let me ask you another question before we do that. Sorry, I know we're running out of time. During your 2024 primary, you broke with the party line to back the uncommitted movement to protest the genocide of Palestinians, and you drafted a state legislative letter demanding an immediate ceasefire. You also introduced a clean repeal of the former Governor Walker's anti-BDS laws. Mm-hmm. How do you connect the struggles of the working class in Wisconsin to the billions of federal taxpayer dollars spent on funding military conflicts and bombings abroad?
I think at its core, Palestinian liberation is intrinsically entwined and connected to the liberation of all of us. So at the state level, you know,
ensuring that we don't have anti-BDS laws, that we protect the right to protest and free speech. The uninstructed movement in Wisconsin, that was also an exercise of free speech, and I think direct democracy and letting our elected officials know what we cared about, what we needed them to do, giving them a lane to course correct. I think working class people, we shouldn't see our tax dollars going to fund genocide and forever wars when we don't have folks here who have access to housing, that we've got kids who are hungry in Wisconsin and across the country. It's unacceptable. And so investing in and fighting for human rights, that's also who I am and why I'm a democratic socialist too, because democracy, human rights, and fairness, those are the principles that that's what dictates the policy that I'm fighting for.
Hell yeah. Wisconsin is the only state in the Midwest without medical marijuana, one of nine nationally. So one of 10 for no Medicaid expansion, one of nine for no medical marijuana. Wisconsinites often drive the neighboring states to purchase weed.
Yeah.
Which means millions of dollars of potential tax revenue is just leaving the state. As governor, will you legalize medical marijuana? And if so, will you also allow or will you also push to legalize it recreationally?
Full legalization of medicinal and recreational marijuana. We also have to make sure that we are fulfilling our responsibility to help folks who have low-level drug offenses, look at expungement, opportunity for cannabis-related entrepreneurship. So it goes beyond just legalizing. I think we have to make sure that it's, you know, creating an infrastructure and an economy that puts Wisconsin farmers first, that makes sure that Wisconsin entrepreneurs are first, that we're not, you know, there's a lot of predatory think lobbyists coming into the cannabis industry right now. Wisconsin has an opportunity to make sure that the model that we have for legalization puts Wisconsinites first. So looking at parts of Michigan, parts of Colorado, but most importantly, that it supports our entrepreneurs, our consumers, and our farmers.
Okay, so this is you kind of already did this from the start, but this is what I call the Zoran question. It's like clearly definable policies.
Yeah.
What are your top five priorities for Wisconsin and how would you go about implementing them?
Public education, fair, cheaper health care, shared revenue, child care, and housing. And so public education, if we want to maintain a democracy in our state and this country, we must invest in what is the last remaining democratic institution. That's public education. So supporting our public schools, making sure that there's fair, cheaper healthcare through the expansion of Medicaid, investing in a public option, and ensuring that we are controlling and regulating healthcare prices to bring healthcare costs down. I talked about shared revenue. Now, this is really important because the state of Wisconsin has been hoarding a lot of our tax dollars away from our local municipalities. And if we want to make a meaningful difference in people's lives in just 2 years, one of the best ways we'll be able to do that is to make sure that our cities and towns have enough resources to fund our libraries, to fix our roads, to make sure that, you know, things that people are thinking about, stoplights, you know, roundabouts, what have you, that local governments have what they need to be able to provide the essential services, fire and EMS, housing. This is something we hear about everywhere. We're going to be able to maintain and lower rent costs by having tenant protections and making sure that we're building permanent affordable housing, increasing density, and having an actual housing agency, not just a pseudo-governmental housing authority. And then the childcare. That has to be lowering to no more than 7% of anyone's annual income should go to childcare. But we move towards building fully subsidized childcare for those folks of family of four making under $115,000.
That was great. Now we're going to do rapid fire. Super easy, super simple. Rapid fire. Do you support repealing Act 10?
Yes.
Universal child care.
Yes.
Free school meals.
Yes.
Guaranteed pay leave.
Yes.
Abolishing ICE.
Yes.
A 1-year data center moratorium.
Yes.
Breaking up big ag.
Yes.
Public grocery stores.
Yes.
Right to repair.
Yes.
Legalizing cannabis.
Yes.
Overturning Citizens United.
Yes.
A workers' bill of rights.
Yes.
A free Palestine.
Yes.
a Scott Walker statue that people can go to that are made by local artisans and craftsmen that people can slap up if they want to?
Tentatively, yes.
Okay. I tried to sneak that in there. I was like, oh, we got the momentum. Like you're saying yes to everything. Maybe I could catch you. Damn it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This was an incredible experience. Your primary is on August 11th. Mm-hmm. You're dancing between first and second of the polls right now. There's some consolidation taking place because obviously you've had a lot of momentum, and centrist Democrats are definitely very scared of having responsive politics in any state. This would be a significant victory for people in Wisconsin, but also for democratic socialism as well, to prove once and for all that these policies are universal, that they're not just pie in the sky ideals, that this is what good governance is. And for people hearing you for the first time today, what do you want them to understand about your convictions, and how can people contribute to your campaign? What are some areas of need for you? We're almost at $50,000.
Oh my God.
Well, 47,500. We can't hit 50. What are you guys doing?
I will say that as goes Wisconsin, as goes the country. If we have this grassroots community powered campaign taking on the status quo, the establishment donors and Dems who don't want us to imagine better, to dream better, if we are the campaign that will actually go back to our progressive roots in Wisconsin and build something better. So where socialism was born in Wisconsin, unemployment insurance, social security, kindergarten. Shout out to Mike. I'm going back to some of our history. But the thing is, if we're able to show the rest of the country that we can have a different type of politics in a purple state where working class people are choosing to have more power and actually have a government that is going to put them first, that changes the game for the entire country. So working class people power means, you know, more organizers, more folks coming out for DSA. I think that everyone needs to be paying attention to what's going on in Wisconsin, because what happens here is a potential foreshadowing of what's to happen in the future.
In person by August 11th, by mail, postmarked by July 22nd, online July 22nd, again, it's open. It's an open primary, so you don't have to have like a party affiliation to be able to vote. And that actually also potentially creates new threats, in my opinion, as well, a little bit. If there is, I think Democrats are going to try to pull all the stops here. I am a little bit worried about like establishment Democrats just like trying to pull all stops, because the more this momentum builds, the more they're like, we have to make sure that there's a corporate do nothing Democrat. And we have to out-organize them, and we have to out-fund. We can't out-fundraise them usually, because outside money is you know, super easy to come by for people like that. You're never going to get that, obviously, which is why these sorts of fundraisers are also important, which is why I was urging you guys to donate. But, you know, they got the money, but we got the people. And, you know, I'm very excited to see where this goes, and I can help out in any way. Hopefully, you know, maybe I'll come to Wisconsin.
We would love to have you in Wisconsin. I'll be able to show you some really good cheese.
I love cheese. I'm a cheesehead.
We have the best cheese in the world.
Also, yeah, you guys have a communist sports team.
Oh, our beloved Packers. People ask me about socialism, I say the three P's: Packers, public schools, and potholes. We can make a connection to how all of that works together.
I feel very, very confident about everything here, straight up.